you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. You're about to hear the continuation of the epic Romano-Saxon War by Josh Hutchins. This is the audio version of our first Twilight Histories book, written by Josh Hutchins. If you're enjoying this series, I highly recommend you pick up the book. And now, on to the story.
The campfire crackles its warmth to the people around it as I approach. I quietly step into the yellowish glow.
Yes, yes, but he lived 4 centuries ago, Krieg. How could you possibly know you are his 20th grandchild?
The man gestures with his hand at another person opposite him. The other man wears a red cloak from a dead Roman soldier, and is rubbing a small gray stone against the blade of a very large axe.
Herman, I'm not going to argue with you about this again. Just because your parentage is dubious doesn't make me any less sure that I am descended from the great Arminius.
Apprentice! I turn to see a short woman looking at me. She's beaming with wide eyes.
Apprentice, what are you doing here?
All conversation stops, and they turn to look at me. I give the woman a small bow.
I came to hear your thoughts about today.
Come, sit here, apprentice, please.
The man with the red cloak stands, offering his stump of wood to me as a seat. I nod politely and sit down. A woman offers me a large cup of what smells like ethanol. I drink it. It tastes like rubbing alcohol mixed with rotten berries. I take a breath, trying to prevent a choking gasp.
Today was glorious,
the other man says. He holds up a small cup and gives a toast in the air.
I'm sorry to interrupt, apprentice, but it is truth. The day was glorious.
I give a slight, thoughtful nod. The woman seated next to me has a thick bear fur as a blanket, and she's rubbing a small oily cloth on the handle of her crossbow. She sees me looking at it and smiles, somewhat embarrassed.
The wood will split if I do not oil it.
I nod. What are you using for oil? She points to the fire. There's an enormous hunk of meat being slowly turned on an iron spit. It sizzles noisily. Horse oil? I ask. She nods and grins.
Roman horse oil.
What's your name?
I am Vash.
I meet eyes with the man who gave me his seat.
I am Krieg.
I nod. What were you discussing before? He places his hands on his hips and jerks his head in the direction of the other man.
Herman doesn't believe I come from the line of Arminius.
Who is Arminius? He nearly crosses his eyes as he raises his palms to the sky. In fact, as I look around, most of the others, and there are more than 20 others, most of them seem dismayed at my question.
Arminius? He is only the first man to unite the tribes of Germania. He defeated 3 Roman legions. Destroyed them,
Herman interjects. Krieg raises his eyebrows.
Yes, destroyed them. He lived during the reign of Augustus or Who knows what the Roman emperor? He lived during that time. The Roman general was named Varus. Although Arminius did betray the Roman general, without which he may not have prevailed, he led the Cherusci, the Saxons, and other tribes. He wore the uniform of a Roman, but his heart was of Germania.
Indeed, I say. Then I think you all carry the spirit of Arminius inside of you. They all seem to agree, somewhat amazed. I'm amazed at myself, really. Where the hell did that bit of poetry come from? I typically tried to avoid such profoundly poetic statements. Better steer the car back into my normal lane of traffic. Today, we killed thousands of Romans. But they killed nearly 500 of our Saxons in the fight. Nobody says anything. I lift my head and give a whimsical sort of look to them. Why are you here?
The fire is warm, a man says.
Think bigger than that.
We are here to kill Romans, Krieg growls.
True, more specifically, we are here to kill 10,000 Romans. I turn to the woman next to me. Vash, today I sent you and 1,000 other women into battle against heavily armored Romans. What is your opinion of that? She seems somewhat taken aback. I think it was good. She holds up her crossbow. With this, I cut down many soldiers, many horses too. I could not do this with just my axe. She looks at me with a savage grin. This machine you have made is best killer I have ever seen. She wags her hand in a dismissive movement. Other women think the same. Today, we made largest payment in Roman blood debt. While the men with their shields push against the Roman legions as if they are oxen pulling plows. People around the fire laugh warmly. We women were busy taking Roman lives. She smacks herself on the shoulder and winks at the woman next to her, who nods in return.
Apprentice, may I ask a question?
I squint. Herman, right?
Yes,
he nods. And I hold out a hand, palm upwards, inviting him to speak.
We are an army of killers. Are we also an army of conquerors?
He looks around, measuring the faces in the orange glow of the cooking fire. The horse meat hisses and steams.
I mean, are we here to occupy this land?
He mildly stamps a leather-bound foot on the ground. I purse my lips. When Daragost gave me this task, it was simply to punish Rome. As far as I knew, and that goes for Praxos and the others with me, and Kindheart, the Roman border on the Rhine was still heavily defended. It's true, the Swabians and the Alans and Vandals came through here in the last few years, but those are mostly just migrations, not armies. They had women and children with them, and wagons loaded with all their belongings. We had no reason to think that the Romans had lost any of their military strength from these migrations. From what we can tell, that may have been a cautious overestimation. I sigh, letting my shoulders slump a little. I don't want to get your hopes up that this may be easy or something. In fact, it'll just be more difficult. If we can't find 10,000 Romans to kill nearby, we'll just have to go looking for them. I give the man a stern look. But no. Occupying this territory wasn't part of the original plan. Of course, the first casualty of war is always the plan. I smile.
So you are saying you might take this land?
Me? Personally? No. I have my own debts to settle back in Britannia. For now, I'm here to punish the Romans, and I look around the fire to make sure everyone was listening. And I'm here to test this army.
I pause, letting that sink in. The terrain here in Saxony, Germania Magna, as the Romans call it, is heavily forested, full of rolling craggy hills and narrow valleys, not to mention the bogs and swamps. It's dark and wet. Romans do not like land like this. They've cut down all the large forests in Italy, if there were any forests like this to begin with. I gesture to the magnificent dark and gnarled trees surrounding us. But apart from an area called the Weald, Britannia is more like Rome and Gaul. Sure, the island is heavily forested, but not like this. Plus, the Romans ruled the island for nearly 400 years. Plenty of time to build roads and cities. I'm here to test this army against Romans. To test your morale, your training, your discipline. Most importantly, to test your mettle. Do you have what it takes to defeat Romans, as this Arminius did in the past? I gesture towards Krieg, who gives a curt nod. What do you know of Britannia? I ask, looking around at the circle of people. Herman shrugs.
Deragas calls it the Grey Island.
Yes, but she's never been there. As far as she knows, the island is just a siren in the sea, calling young men to come plunder her. But too many times men simply go there to their death. They all nod. The Britons declared a Roman general named Constantine as the emperor a few years ago, and he went to conquer much of Gaul and Hispania. But I'm almost certain he's dead now. The child who sits on the throne in Rome, Honorius, sent a message to the people of Britannia. I was there, telling them to deal with their own defenses. They have almost nobody left on the island, no one who can hold a spear or a sword. I look at Vash. And no women to hold an axe, not to mention your crossbows. But there are still Roman cohorts in the north of the island. Who knows what could happen? What I do know is that Britannia is ripe for the taking. Once we've repaid Rome's blood debt to the Saxon tribes, and we've proven ourselves to be a worthy and capable fighting force, I'm returning to the Saxon shore and sailing for the Grey Island to take it. I clench my fist and raise it in front of my face. The group cheers. The man Herman nods.
I've heard wonders inside the Roman Empire. Is it true they heat the floors of their bathing houses?
Yes, it's true. He shrugs.
I don't see how it's worth it. When the Romans occupy land, when they civilize it, Romanize it, they disarm the indigenous people. They levy taxes and tributes. They take all the boys back to Rome, where they train them to become soldiers, who then return to their lands and continue the oppression. This is not civilized. All this in exchange for baths.
He shakes his head sharply.
Herman, there is difference between knowing what a bath is and actually taking a bath. You should know that distinction better than any man alive. Vash says with a broad smile.
Herman glares for a moment, and the man next to him bellows a laugh, slapping him on the back. It seems to jar Herman loose, and he answers with a guffaw of his own.
Perhaps it is so, Vash, but unless you intend on permitting me to plow your field, please concern yourself with your own baths, not mine.
He smiles. And Vash nods, acknowledging the hit.
As it is, apprentice, I do not think I've made my point clearly. Romanization is, in itself, not a virtue. On top of that notion, the local people are never again in command of their future. Administrative and leadership positions are filled with relatives of the Caesar, or they are appointed for purely political reasons, or to repay favors. As a result, the conquered people are invariably saddled with a worse sort of worthless
decadent, cruel, arrogant, and inept Romans possible.
What about Rhodes?
A man says, standing with his arms crossed.
Romans build roads everywhere they go, and they make it easy to travel. Yes, roads are nice, but the Romans build roads so they can move the legions faster. If it weren't for that, they wouldn't bother with the hassle of roads. This is like shooting arrow and painting target at the round where it lands,
Herman answers.
The Grey Britannia has roads?
Krieg asks me. Yes, there are roads in Britannia. I've seen some of them. But there are rivers, too. Good rivers for travel. The Thames, the Humber, the Avon. I look around at the fire again. Bright, intelligent faces. Able bodies. They look well fed and rested, despite the battle they'd fought less than half a day ago. Herman stands and holds up his cup.
To the Romans we fight today, and the Romans we fight in Britannia. And to the songs they'll sing of us in the afterworld. The Apprentice. Prost!
Together, we all raise our cups to the night sky and drink them dry. I push the leather tent flap aside and step into the warmth of my command tent. Praxis and Kindheart are bent over the map table, staring down at it. I turn to the other person in the room. She's sitting on a wooden stool, carefully eating. How is it?
Ingrid like horse meat.
She smiles and holds out a slice to me. No thanks. I ate already. I gesture to the other two. How long have they been staring at that map?
Since you left, it is as if they can discover meaning of life inside of it.
I nod and start to move to their table, but Ingrid grabs me by the wrist.
What did the people tell you, Atzer?
I pause, thinking. They are in high spirits. We just gotta be careful about drunkenness. Either they're going feral, or they're becoming Klingons. She squints.
Klingons? This is another word for Saxons or drunks, yeah?
I bounce my head playfully from side to side, pursing my lips.
Well,
kinda. Saxons are scary, wild. They speak a different language. They ride around in ships, fight with swords. Not quite like a Batleth, I tell myself. And they have funny-looking faces, so yeah. Saxons are kind of like Klingons.
Ingrid knows not of these Klingons. Do they have a great general, like Arminius?
She looks at me with eager, doe-like eyes. Her brown hair is pulled back in a tight sort of ponytail, but much wilder.
Well, kinda. I mean, they have Worf.
Worf? Like Wolf?
This is a Saxon name. Or perhaps it is from Gaul. Is this great Klingon Wolf from Gaul, or is he from Germania?
No, he's from a galaxy far, far away. I slap myself mentally, knowing that somewhere, sometime, Gene Roddenberry and George Lucas are both turning in their graves. It's not important. I wave my hands.
Saxons are like Klingons, and Klingons are like Saxons. But I'm nothing like Worf.
She sits back and tosses her legs on a nearby footstool, exposing her milk-white skin all the way up her thighs. She gives me a mischievous and playful smile.
Certainly not. You talk too much. Worf Klingon probably only speak when he must.
True, but he has lots of good zingers. She furrows her brow, squinting.
Zingers?
That means he says lots of good things, like,
perhaps today is a good day to die, and revenge is a dish best served cold.
Her eyes flare open, and her skin flushes. She nods.
Dish best served cold. Ingrid like this.
I realize I'm creating a monster, and probably causing irreparable damage to this world and its timeline. I gesture to her hunk of meat with my chin. Enjoy that horse meat. I need to speak with the guys. I walk to the table and assume the position.
This table is not large enough for all three of us at once,
Kindheart says.
I heard you tell Ingrid morale is high. That's to be expected after the pasting we gave the Romans today,
Praxis says, his eyes never turning from the map. You know, Praxos, I have never and will never question your loyalty to me. But are you okay? Does any of this bother you? He shakes his head.
I stopped being a Roman a long time ago. When I was sent to deliver that message to Britannia, just as Alaric and his Visigoths were poised to destroy Rome and my family with them, I told myself it was the last service I would ever do for Rome. If I ever make it back to Rome and my family has survived, we'll take all we have and go elsewhere, hopefully Britannia. Until recently, I was still holding out hope that Honorius and the pack of fools Rome calls the Senate would find a way to keep the city safe. Everything tells me my family is dead now, all of them. So yes, I am okay with all of this.
I nod. You'll see your wife and family again. I know it. He tightens his jaw and nods at me. I let out a deep breath. Back to the topic of the soldiers. I visited over a dozen campfires and cookfires, hearing their concerns and mostly sharing our vision of a Britannic conquest with them. Morale is good. One or two more such visits, and I would have needed a guide to make it back here. Praxis frowns.
Are you in any condition to discuss plans?
I nod, blinking and holding my eyes open widely, trying to ward off the buzz of the mead. Wishing I'd paid for a military-grade blood boost before I came to this time travel adventure. It probably would have saved me from the infection of my arm, too. Well, maybe what's left of my last blood boost did help. Who knows? I'm good, Praxos. Let's hear it. He grins and points to a line on the map.
Glycerin is due to return with his flotilla in 2 weeks. I directed Minch and his men in building the fortification around the supply depot and the river docks where we left the easel.
I nod but remain silent. He gives me a tight-lipped glance, then moves his finger to where we are.
We completed the camp much faster than I was expecting, so all the caltrops have been placed as well.
He sweeps his hand across the animal skin map.
Here and here. Since we were unable to fully destroy the Roman cavalry this morning, we are still vulnerable to their attacks and raids, especially this corridor here.
He draws a line with his index finger from a point near the headwaters of the easel to where our current camp lies.
It may not look like much on this map, but that small gap is more than 15 kilometers.
He points to somewhere outside the tent's walls.
We've established a quartermaster yard just over there, near the very center of the camp. At your suggestion, I placed Marcus in charge of our supplies. He reported to me earlier.
Prexos removes a small slip of crude paper from a pouch on his belt and unfolds it.
He says, with the number of men and women we have now, with winter upon us, allowing for spoilage, but assuming there will be no fires or direct attacks on the storerooms, we have ample provender for 41 days. That allows for 2 meals per day, one in morning, one in the early evening.
He hands the paper to me.
Of course, with all the horse meat the army is eating, that 41-day estimate will probably stretch to 50 or more. He's placed what horse meat he can in underground storage, but with the cool weather, it doesn't matter if the meat stays outside for a few days. It won't spoil. It's some 600 horse carcasses. Quarters, flanks, lots of meat. They've all had their heads cut off.
He rubs his temples.
Roman horses have Roman heads,
Kindheart says.
Fine, but have either of you considered Daragos' reaction when she realizes what we're doing?
I smirk. We have more pressing things to worry about right now.
Precisely. For starters, apprentice, we've practically invaded Rome in winter.
I open my mouth to object, but he holds up a hand and gives a nod.
Yes, yes. I know I agreed to it, even supported it. I still support it. But this comes with certain limitations. Truthfully, I'm amazed our Saxons haven't deserted yet. If it weren't for this unseasonably warm weather, then they surely would have. Nothing mutinies like a pack of freezing Saxons.
We are here to punish Rome. These Saxons are hardy folk and will uphold our commitment to be here.
Praxos gives Kindheart a slight bow.
Yes, I believe that. I am simply keeping this issue at the front of our plans. We cannot ignore the need to keep the army supplied and warm this winter.
Nobody's forgetting that, Praxos. We've got Glycerians shuttling supplies and booty on the river nonstop. Kindheart gives me a frown now.
Apprentice, you act as if we imbeciles in Germania never considered doing that before.
I don't think that, Kindheart. I just think we're doing a lot more of it this time. He purses his lips and nods. We share your concern, Praxos, but please, continue with this briefing. I'm finding it cathartic in a strange sort of way. He shakes his head, as if he's shaking away an evil thought. Then he points to another wavy line.
Something for you to chew on, apprentice. There are at least 3 abandoned Roman camps along the Lippe River. They are from the time of Arminius, so they may be completely overgrown.
Arminius, indeed. I say it as if I'm trying to give the hint that I'd not just learned of him this very evening.
If we're going to hold this area for any longer than a year, I suggest we send scouts to ascertain the status of these forts.
I give a small shrug. All right, I'll chew on it. Kindheart blows out a breath.
Holding this territory will not be easy. Saxony, Germania altogether, in fact, is not organized like Rome. We cannot simply appoint a governor or a prefect and settle them here with a legion and a ready-made bureaucracy.
He gives us both a wary look.
However, if we do intend to continue Saxon influence here, I suggest a series of strategic forts and trading posts. Along the Lippe may be one such place. Another is here where we are now.
Let's put that discussion on hold for now. I agree we need to discuss it more, but I want input from Daragos and the council before then.
Very well. I'll move on to the scouting reports.
He slides a few notes in front of him.
There's another bridge upriver about 30 kilometers at Quadriborigium.
He points a finger on the map.
Scouting shows no activity there. None this side of the river, anyway.
He looks at me.
We station a handful of scouts there with instructions to notify us of any changes.
He sets the note down and picks up another.
Downriver, near Escobergium, the same.
Wait. The Saxon scouts wrote their reports on paper? Kynard chuckles.
No, they can't write, apprentice,
Praxis says with a straight face.
They gave me their reports, and I wrote them down.
He takes a breath.
Our scouting parties have found no evidence of Roman activity on this side of the river outside a few wood-cutting parties like we encountered days ago, and a few merchants.
I crease my forehead. What did the scouts do with the merchants? He grins.
They bought all of their goods.
Bought?
Yes, apprentice, bought. All scouts have been supplied with a small amount of money, and have instructions to buy anything useful to our army. That may also include information.
He grins savagely.
We know where your sons are.
He turns to Kynard, who, for his own part, sucks in a sharp breath. His eyes are wide.
Yes? And where? Why have you been keeping this from me?
Settle down, my friend. They are safe and in good health. They are both being put to hard labor on the far side of the river, near Nova Isium.
Kynard whirls his glare at me, but I hold my stare at Praxos. Praxos, do the Romans know they are the sons of Kynard? Praxos tilts his head.
I do not know.
I look at Kynard. What do you want to do? We stare at each other in silence for several seconds. Because it would be a serious error to...
No!
Kynard snaps.
We cannot make war decisions based on my two sons in captivity.
He exhales.
However, I will take some warriors with me, and we will free my sons.
He looks at me.
I am sorry, apprentice, but I am not asking for permission.
A light breeze rustles the tent, making me shiver involuntarily. The laughter and the merry voices of the troops around nearby campfires has gone silent, replaced by the mild gusts of frigid winter air. The braziers in my tent keep the chill at bay. In fact, aside from the wind, their flittering flames is all I hear. No, that's not true. After all this time, though, I've learned to tune out Kynard and Praxos' snoring. Kynard sounds like a horse with a respiratory infection. I'm not sure how heck it gets any sleep next to him. Praxos sounds like a landslider, some sort of dying animal. How long have I been sleeping in their presence? Weeks? Months? In any case, I've grown tone-deaf to their nocturnal sounds. Normally I hear the soft cat purr of Ingrid, too, but tonight I don't hear anything of her. The cold, the dim flicker of the fires and the braziers, the subtle sounds, the feel of thick furs against my bare skin. I normally don't sleep naked, but something prompted me to tonight. I feel movement. It's... Slight vibrations tickle my skin through the hard-packed floor. Movement. I reach for my sword stowed next to me.
Are you going to use that sword on me?
Ingrid asks, as she crawls into my bedroll.
Where are your clothes?
Clothes? Why do you care, apprentice? Where are your clothes?
Her skin is cold against mine. She probes my body, looking for my sword. I move forward and place my lips on hers, waves of heat flowing over my skin. The guys won't be getting any sleep tonight, I whisper in her ear. She pulls back from me.
No, they won't. They've already left.
She tenderly bites at my collarbone.
Wait, what? What do you mean they already left?
I see her make a mischievous smile in the orange glow.
Kindhearted and Praxos both left.
Where did they go?
I ask, furrowing my brow.
They went to rescue Kindheart's sons. Did you not notice lack of snoring?
What?
Relax, apprentice. There is nothing you can do about it now. How about I show you how real woman makes love to man?
My mouth hangs open, waiting for words to come out.
I will not hurt you.
She presses her lips against my ear.
Not much.
Apprentice! Apprentice! Wake up! Romans! Romans!
Ingrid shakes me from my dreams.
What? What's going on?
Fresh wood has been placed in the braziers, brightly lighting the tent. Two Saxon soldiers stand in the room, along with one of my guards. Hecate is rising from her bed, wrapping her cloak against her tightly. I throw off the covers, exposing my body to the cold. I quickly begin dressing myself.
The Romans, apprentice, they are making sortie out of their castra and are crossing the bridge.
Mother of...
I trail off.
How many?
At least doubles the number we fought yesterday.
I squint. Yesterday? Is it already morning?
The eastern sky is showing first signs of gray, apprentice. The Romans will have enough daylight to begin their attack soon.
Why didn't the guards notice this?
We did notice. We are noticing now. We are here informing you of it.
Very well. Rouse the army. The man's expression brings me up short. What's wrong?
Apprentice, the army spent the night drinking. Most will still be drunk. The remainder cannot be prepared in time. Even if we raised all the army, we have not enough to hold the Romans back.
Not even on the bridge?
Honestly, apprentice, no. It will not be enough. We should run.
I look around.
Where the hell are Kindheart and Praxos?
They will not return for days,
Ingrid answers, in a voice heavy with regret. I look at her eyes. Their fire seems gone. I turn back to the Saxon soldier.
Okay.
We've been playing chess so far. Now let's play some poker.
What do you mean, sir?
Poker, I say, unbuckling the sword I'd strapped on mere moments ago. I place a hand on his shoulder. Light the torches at the front of the camp and open the gate nearest the Romans. He steps back, aghast.
That would be a bad idea, apprentice.
A bad move. I hope the Romans think that too. I look around the room, then back to the soldier. Do it quickly and discreetly. Stay out of sight. Do not rouse a single Saxon warrior.
This is madness.
Do it, I say. He salutes and sprints out of the tent. The rest of you stay out of sight, including you, I say to Ingrid. She moves to me and kisses my cheek, then wraps her arm around my now naked waist.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to play some poker. I kiss her on the forehead. You stay here. Stay out of sight.
No, Ingrid can fight. Ingrid, go with you.
No. This won't work if you come with me. Trust me. Stay here. I turn to the tent entrance and push the flap aside. A blast of impossibly cold air summons goosebumps across my entire body. I step into the dim gray of the morning and walk barefoot to the front of the camp, my feet crunching on fresh snow. My naked flesh already aching from the cold. In minutes, I reach the edge of our small fort. The soldier did well. Several torches burned nearby, casting a yellowish light on my skin. And the rudimentary spiked gate has been pulled out of the way, opening our fortified camp to any Roman attack with welcome arms. I assume a calm posture at the opening of the gate, facing the Roman bridge. Wind whips all around me. I say a small prayer that my penis doesn't freeze off. If it does, I have respite in the fact that I put it to good use last night. Across the bridge, I see a jumble of torches, bobbing up and down as the Roman soldiers advance. I hear the subtle thump, thump, as their leather shoes slap against the stone of the bridge. I close my eyes, letting the pain of the cold wash over me and through me. My nipples are hard enough to cut glass. My skin aches. I clench my teeth to prevent them from chattering. All my thoughts turn to Ingrid and my testicles.
If you enjoyed this show, consider picking up a copy of the book on Amazon or through the website at twilighthistories.com. It's our first Twilight Histories book, and Josh has put a huge amount of effort into it, expanding the story and making sure it was edited and beta tested. It's a solid, well-crafted book, and if you enjoy listening to it, why not have it on your shelf? When you purchase it, please give it a generous rating on Amazon. This will help the book get picked up by Amazon search engines, so it will be visible to others. You can find the book on Amazon by running a search for Josh Hutchins or Romano-Saxon War, or by going to the website at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening, and take care.